Well, thank you again for the invitation to speak to you today. I'm looking forward to it, and we'll thoroughly enjoy it. And I know I speak for all of you in thanking Breck for that wonderful story she shared this morning about 9/11. And I appreciate the emotion that you showed. I just want to say if I had tried to share that story, I would have been blubbering like a baby up here. So you did a great job with that story. According to research, more than 39% of people have been asked by their employer to do something that is dishonest. Here's an example. Kevin started out in middle management of his company, worked really hard. His hard work was noticed, and eventually he was promoted to a senior management level, and his continued hard work and dedication was noticed, and eventually the CEO took notice of him and promoted him to assistant vice president. And from that point on, they began working together very closely. One day they were in a meeting in the conference room, and the phone rang. Kevin picked it up, and he said, just a minute. And he put his hand over the phone and turned to the CEO and said, it's Kevin in accounting. He needs some information about the upcoming merger. And the CEO said quietly, tell him I'm not here. So let's pause that story for a minute. Let me ask you, what would you do if you were asked by the CEO to tell just a small little white lie? Well, this is what Kevin did. He handed the phone to the CEO and said, you tell him. And when the CEO was finished with his call, he turned to Kevin angrily and said, why didn't you tell him I wasn't here? And Kevin said, if I can lie to Kurt, I can lie to you. And if you can't trust me, then I'm no good to you or this company. Not a bad response, don't you think? According to Kevin, honesty in the minor areas of life assures that you will be honest in the major areas of life. And I think Kevin is correct. Honesty is not something that we turn on or off at will or at whim. Either we are honest or we are dishonest. Thus, to be honest, we must be honest in all things. And that's what Jesus expects of those who follow him. Let's return today to the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus preached the sermon, and the traditional site overlooks the sermon. And on a hill or a place, something like this, or maybe this place, Jesus had this to say about honesty in Matthew 5, verse 33 through 37. Again, you've heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not break your oath, but keep the oaths you have made to the Lord. But I tell you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. Simply let your yes be yes, and your no, no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. So to understand what Jesus teaches here, let's break it down into three parts. Let's start by looking at the Old Testament teaching on honesty. And then we'll look at what the religious leaders of Jesus' day taught about honesty. And then we'll conclude with what Jesus has to say about honesty. So turning to what the Old Testament taught about honesty, in verse 33, Jesus said, you've heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not break your oaths, but keep the oaths you have made to the Lord. Now that's not a quote of a specific verse, but it's a summary of what the Old Testament taught about honesty to the people of Israel. For example, here's some verses. Leviticus 19:12. Do not swear falsely by my name and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. Numbers 30, verse 2. When a man makes a vow to the Lord or takes an oath to obligate himself, he must not break his word, but must do everything he said. Deuteronomy 23:21. If you make a vow to the Lord your God, do not be slow to pay it, for the Lord your God will certainly demand it of you, and you will be guilty of sin. So I hope you noticed as we looked at those three verses that they all focus on the taking of oaths or making a vow and speaking about honesty. And so you can see what Jesus said in the sermon is a pretty good summary of all of that teaching about oath-taking and honesty in the Old Testament. And so that raises a question. When it comes to honesty, why the emphasis on oaths or vows? Why did the Old Testament not just teach people to tell the truth to begin with? Why is the focus on keeping one's oaths? The answer is that the Old Testament recognizes human sinfulness. Specifically, the Old Testament recognizes the temptation for humans to lie. You can even say the Old Testament expected human beings to lie. And so the point of the oath is to put people under a greater obligation to tell the truth. With an oath, people are called to a higher standard of truth-telling because humans have such a tendency to lie. So do you think that's true? Do you think human beings have a great tendency to lie? James Patterson and Peter Kim did some extensive research on the truth-telling habits of Americans. In their book, The Day America Told the Truth, these are some of their findings. 91% of Americans lie regularly. When we refrain from lying, it's not because we think it's wrong, but because we are afraid we will get caught. We lie to just about everybody. But the better we know a person, the more likely it is that we have told that person a serious lie. We lie to get power over other people, to control the lives of others. We lie because we don't like the way we are and we want to shape the impressions of others about us. 2 out of 3 Americans believe there's nothing wrong with lying. Only 31% of Americans believe that honesty is the best policy, which led these authors to conclude lying has become a cultural trait of America. Lying is embedded in our national character. Americans lie about everything, and usually for no good reason. So does that conclusion surprise you? Probably not. It's easy to lie. The truth is, it's not just easy for us as Americans to lie. It's easy for everyone in every place and in every time to lie, including the people of Israel. The Old Testament recognized this temptation for people to lie, and so the use of oaths or vows was instituted as a concession to human sinfulness. With an oath, people are placed under greater obligation than normal to tell the truth. Thus, with people as a whole, oath-taking is necessary to ensure honesty. That's why the American judicial system is based on the taking of oaths. When somebody testifies in a court of law, they must first take an oath to tell the truth. Because without truthful testimony, there is no justice in the land. And that's why lying or perjury is illegal. Not just wrong, but illegal in our country. Because when somebody is placed under oath, if we cannot trust what they are telling is the truth, then we will not have justice. So that's a quick summary of the Old Testament teaching on honesty. It suffices for our purpose today. Now we turn our attention to what the Jewish leaders taught about honesty and oath-taking in Jesus' day. And he refers to that a little bit later in what he says, when he says, I tell you, do not swear at all by God's throne or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. The religious leaders at that point in time began with the Old Testament teaching about oath-taking, focused on that. But over time, over many years, it evolved into specific rules about what oaths were valid and binding and what oaths were not. It wasn't necessarily done intentionally, but the way they ended up is a way to be even more dishonest despite the taking of oaths, because not all oaths were binding. Jesus refers to this in chapter 23 of Matthew. In verse 16, "Woe to you, blind guides! If anyone swears by the temple, it means nothing. But if anyone swears by the gold in the temple, he is bound by his oath." See that slight distinction? One's not binding, the other is binding. In verse 18, "You also say, if anyone swears by the altar, it means nothing. But if anyone swears by the gift on the altar, he is bound by his oath." Again, subtle distinction between an oath that is binding and one that is not. So you see, instead of taking oaths as intended, the religious leaders ended up with rules that created even more opportunities for dishonesty. They did this by creating these arbitrary distinctions. And as you can see in these verses, for which oaths were binding and which were not, if you knew the rules, you could get by with lying and not be guilty. Sort of like what my childhood friends and I did when it came to trying to ensure each other's honesty. So if we were together and we wanted to insist that someone was telling the truth or would do what they said they would do, we would make them promise or swear, "You swear." But then we would say, "No crosses count." Because if you had crossed a finger or a leg or an arm, then what you said didn't count. So we would make them say, "No crosses count, but if your finger was crossed when you said that, it didn't count either." And more than once, my childhood friends have appealed to hairs of their head being crossed to get out of a promise. You see, my childhood friends and I had real issues with honesty, obviously. Back to the Pharisees, they even had a rule that turned on a preposition. They said, if you swore by Jerusalem, your oath did not count, but if you swore toward Jerusalem, then your oath was binding. And another arbitrary rule of the religious leaders was this: if you swore by the name of God, your oath was really binding, but if you swore by something lesser than God, then it wasn't as binding. And Jesus seems to be referring to this when he says, "Do not swear at all by heaven, for it is God's throne, by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king." In other words, even if you say these are distinctions, you don't get off the hook because all of these are God's. It all belongs to God. So there's really nothing you can appeal to, he says, referring to what the religious leaders were saying, that will let you off the hook. Of course, his point here is to reject any and all efforts to create opportunities for dishonesty. So the religious leaders of Jesus' day with their arbitrary rules on oath-taking ended up being just another example of human sinfulness. And in this case, of people's tendency to lie at every opportunity. So with that background, let's consider what Jesus says about honesty. Simply let your yes be yes and your no, no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. What does Jesus mean with these words? Let's first clarify what he doesn't mean, and that is, he doesn't mean to say that a Christian can never be placed under oath. For when he stood before the Sanhedrin before his crucifixion, he allowed himself to be placed under oath by them and responded to their query. So it's not that oath-taking itself is bad. But what Jesus does mean by these words is that the followers of Jesus are to be so consistently and reliably honest that for them the taking of oaths becomes unnecessary. Instead of relying on oaths to ensure truthfulness, Jesus demands his followers, you and I, to tell the truth every time, every occasion, every opportunity. And thus, when it comes to honesty, Jesus is not willing to concede anything to human sinfulness. Whereas the Old Testament made the concession with the use of oaths, Jesus challenges us to conquer human sinfulness altogether. As his disciples were to live such lives of honesty, then an oath is never necessary because we speak the truth, whether under oath or not. It's the highest standard of honesty, always truthful, and it's the standard Jesus calls us to live. So, a few questions. When turning in your expense reports, do you slip in receipts that don't quite qualify as true business expenses? Do you turn in homework that you didn't do, got from somewhere else or on the internet? Do you criticize people behind their back, but when facing them, you're very nice? Do you mislead or lie to your parents about where you're going? Do you borrow company property that never quite makes it back to the company? I had a good friend who's passed now, but he used to love to tell this story about a friend of his that owned a small company, and he employed about 6 laborers, and from time to time there was digging and different things to do, and so this friend, the owner of the company, decided it was time to replace his shovels. He only needed 6. He went to the store and bought 12. And when he passed them out to his employees, he said, okay, here's 6. Go ahead and take those home. So I'll have the 6 here when we need them for work. So let me ask you a real personal question. I know I'm meddling here, but are there any church chairs or tables sitting in your garage right now? So let's put this teaching of Jesus in a little context here. As mentioned earlier, the teaching on honesty comes from the Sermon on the Mount, and the theme is found in the verse that was read earlier, Matthew 5:20. I tell you, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. As you know, the religious leaders were extremely religious. But the religion was focused on the externals, almost exclusively on the externals. For example, they taught it was wrong to murder, but they said nothing about the hatred that leads to murder. And so when Jesus says that our righteousness must exceed that of the Pharisees and teachers of the law, he was referring to internal righteousness, not excluding the external, but saying righteousness must be both inside and outside, both behavior and matter of the heart. For example, not only is it wrong to murder, but it's also wrong to harbor the hatred of someone else towards someone else that might lead to something bad. To have a righteousness that surpasses that of the Pharisees and teachers of the law, righteousness must be mixed throughout our lives. So consider this picture of some old paint cans. And more than once I've gone out to the garage, or maybe I should say I've been told to go out to the garage and get some paint, that old paint can. We're going to do some touch-up painting. And so you take it and, you know, you put the lid back on it. It never quite seals it. So you take the lid off the can, and there's this film on top that's dried out, and it looks like the right color. But you have to peel that away, of course, and discard it. And then what's underneath is not seems to be the right color because the pigment has settled to the bottom of the can. So you can either take it to the hardware store and have them shake it, or you can grab a stick and begin to stir the can, and you have to go all the way to the bottom because the pigment's in the bottom. And so you're stirring that, and as you're stirring the pigment back into the paint, it begins to turn colors, and you can see, as this picture indicates, it begins to swirl with your stick, and more of the color is dispersed through the paint until finally it is completely dispersed throughout the paint, and then it's ready to be used. That's what Jesus says about righteousness in our lives. It's not sufficient to be on the top. It has to be mixed throughout our lives, in our heart. And so honesty, too, has to be mixed throughout our lives so that we're always honest. As Robert Martin said, honesty in small things is not a small thing. Last week we talked about our calling as Christians to be the salt of the earth. We're to live lives that impact other people around us so that we make the world a better place. And one of these areas is in what we say and in our honest expressions and behavior to other people. We should be such examples of absolute honesty that the world takes notice. Like this boy in the story that was originally reported in Sports Illustrated. At a T-ball game in Wellington, Florida, 7-year-old first baseman Tanner Muncy fielded the ball and tried to tag the runner going from first to second. The umpire, Laura Benson, called the runner out, but Tanner immediately told her, "Ma'am, I didn't touch him." And so she reversed her call and called the runner at second safe. 2 weeks later, Laura was calling the game again, and Tanner Muncy was on the field playing, and this time he was playing shortstop. And as Laura watched, the runner went from second to third. Tanner, it appeared that he tagged him, and so she called the runner, did not tag him, so she called the runner safe. Tanner didn't say anything, went back to his place, but he had a strange expression on his face. And so Laura decided to ask him about it, and she said, "Did you tag the runner?" He said, "Yes, ma'am." So she called the runner out. So the opposing coach roared onto the field, what's going on here? And she told him the story. It happened 2 weeks ago. She said, "If a kid's that honest, I got to give it to him." That's how honest we should be. Always honest in all that we do. I invite you to stand and sing.